Good afternoon and welcome to 101.5 FM here on UMFM. I'm Ryan Funk and you're listening to UTalk. Today we have a very special episode. We're going to be listening to some various indigenous speakers, storytellers, and knowledge keepers share about their experiences, culture, and language in an awesome project from U Multicultural called the Indigenous Languages Series. All right, let's jump right into it. Robertson is a strong Cree speaker who values all Indigenous languages. His goals are to teach his culture's words and language through the human spirit of storytelling, through the approach of listening and learn. To quote Cameron, "I truly have changed from a life of shambles. As a Cree storyteller, I have so much to tell, and not enough to listen nor understand."
Hello. My name is Cameron Robertson, and today I'm going to give you guys a little lesson on some Cree words, just simple words, and talk a little bit about word coining and how Cree has changed throughout time. We'll talk a little bit about new words, word coining. Start with simple words, just common words, hello. There's only hello. There's no word for goodbye in my language, but we'll start with hello. Here you go, tansi, T-A-N-S-I, tansi, and that means hello. T-A-N-I-S-I means tansi, which means how are you or how is it or how are you. They're related, but tansi. Dance is more used for hello in my language today. There's also another word would be, a dog, a pup, a household pup or whatever. You call them atim, A-T-A-I-M, atim. This word related to the word horse. A horse, you say mistatim. The mista, M-I-S-T-A, it means big. It means big. So the mistatim means big dog. So this is how languages, words are coined, I guess. Our elders, they barely saw any horses. And when they did see horses, they probably went, look at that big dog, you know. So this is how words were coined. So like, say this hat I'm wearing, it was word coined as well. This is called a flat cap. This cap is well over 100 years old, and I wear it proudly. It was given to me by somebody that to honor, and I wear it proudly today. It's a Cree hat, and a lot of my Cree people wore these hats, and it's flat cap. And the way you say it in Cree is napagastutin. Napage means flat. Astutin means hat. Napagastutin. N-A-P-A-K-A-S-T-O-N. Napagastutin. You know, things like that were coined a lot. Well, there's word coining for microwaves, word coining for cell phones, internet, TVs. Whatever you see, you'll have to name it in Cree. That's important of keeping our language alive, is word coining and making people aware of what it means. If you go back, if you ever ask questions and hear a word and you don't know what it means, just punch it into Facebook, any Facebook group or any media, you know, any group, and just ask questions. There's a lot of good groups out there. You know, they teach you, and there's even some with pronunciations. I have everything that I use on a book, I posted right away, and I have sound with it. So I record my voice on my phone, and then I upload it to my cloud, and then from my cloud I take it from SoundCloud, and then from SoundCloud I cut and paste it onto the group, and that works. They can hear my word, so people will be able to hear what I'm saying, or you know, there's stories on there. There's, I don't know, songs, old Cree songs. It's also a different apps I use on there. You can find on there. Let's get back to talking about words. Word coining, I find is very difficult for some people, especially these new speakers. But it does exist, and word coining has been going on since Wisa Gatesack set foot on this earth, and the beginning of time. He had to name everything, or you know, wherever the language came from, had to be everything had to have a name. Language to me today is very important. I must help keep it alive. And teaching it is what I love doing. But there's a lot of other words out there that you need to know. There, like I said, there's no word for goodbye in Cree. There's, you know, see you later, which means I will see you later. But in the English language, you'll say, but you know, I'll see you later. I will see you later. But in Cree, you're saying, later I will see you. It's kind of backwards. The grammar is kind of, batemai is in front. So it's just the way the grammatical structure of the Cree works. And this is important to understand. And this is what I do at the university. I help teach the language there as I'm the lab tech there. So the lab tech there, and I really love what I'm doing, and I'm hoping to do more. I want to be able to I've been kind of clouded with so many things for all my whole life, and I'm healing. I'm healing with my language, and I'm healing with my words. I'm writing novels. I'm doing everything I can to kind of keep it alive for myself and my family. I'm learning a lot of things that I forgot about because of culture change, because I moved here to Winnipeg. If you're new to Canada and wanting to visit a Cree family, you would probably just do whatever everybody else does. You know, knock at the door. They would say, "Bih bih bih tige." That means come in. And you would step inside. You know, but honor them by taking off your shoes if they invite you in. Just listen to them. Cree people have a lot of good things to say. They will feed you. They'll laugh with you. They'll tell you stories. You may not understand, so you might need somebody like me to translate for you. And there's a lot of us that still translate. But you got to make sure it's a good translator, because you don't want one that's going to make up words. There's people that in the community, if you go to a community and you ask the chief's office if there's anybody that would translate, they would refer you to somebody, and this person would take you around. And you know, it happens. I've went to a few places to talk to people and in other languages, and you know, I've been chaperoned around the community by other members, and it's important to be able to feel comfortable with them. And it's just like the way you want to be treated when somebody's stepping into your house. You have to have that amount of respect walking in and walking out. You walk out with open mind and open heart and better understanding of how to visit a Cree family, you know. We are beautiful people. We love to laugh. We tell stories. We do a lot of. We love to cook. You gotta have our duck soup. Right now it's springtime, and geese are migrating. Everybody's crazy about the geese. Oh, another word is geese. Is niska. That's one goose, niska, and many geese is niskak. N-I-S-K-A-K. Niska, that's many geese. And, you know, they would love to cook you goose and sit there and just enjoy their time. There's a lot of good people that I visit, and I still do today, and I sit down and we talk and we laugh, and we tell stories from long ago, and you know, I'm always paying attention and I'm always listening to their words. So I pay attention, like I can hear them, their souls speak, their spirits speak inside them, because that's what communication is all about, is the spirit to another. It's important to keep that alive, and it's important to have that respect when you're visiting. You know, he would be Ekosani, E-K-O-S-A-N-I, Ekosani. That means thank you. And please would probably, please, Namonama. I know please, but I don't like, it's just so many words at once. So it's not one word, it's a whole sentence. So, you know, monawaga yi wichihin. That's please, right? So I'll explain that, okay?
Okay?
Okay, so please would probably be, there is a word, but like I said, maybe it's coined. The old Cree would probably be namona ma kagi wichihin. Can you help me? There was no please, but the closest would be namona ma kagi wichihin. You know, they're asking for help. There was no, it was probably because begging was an insult to people. You didn't have to beg back in the day. You know, things were given freely to people. They were, you know, if somebody was hungry, they were helped right away. You didn't have to say please. People were good people back then. It's changed though, like I said before. But we need to bring this back to our communities, our people, our children. Another thing is introduction. Say if you're wanting to meet the family and you're stepping into their house, and you can say, Dance, and then your name, Nina. Nina, like the woman's name in English, it means myself, me in Cree, Nina. Ninan, with a N at the end, it means us, all of us. So Nina is individual, Ninan is all of us. You would say, If you're by yourself, you would say your name and Nina. Or if you're with somebody, Nina. Epewap mita. We come to see you. We come to visit. Or you can say, we come to see you, if it's business-wise. Or epeyugata, we come to visit, if you're visiting, if you're coming to visit. And then they would respond, oh, tabwegiste. And that means, oh, that's really good. Things like that. And then if you're visiting, whatever, if your translator is there and telling you whatever you got to do and whatever, what you want to know, and then it's time to leave, you can say, Egusane, tabwega yeska pe yugatan, which means, thank you. This is very good that I have come to see you, come and visit with you. And then you can either whatever, you know, shake hands or hug or whatever. And there's no word for goodbye, but there's, we will see you again one day. And, you know, these things are beautiful and they need to be remembered and they need to be honored. Our children need to know this for sure, because nowadays there is no respect. I mean, it's there, but it's got to be learned. You know, it's got to be learned. You're not born respectful. The Cree people were born respectful. Well, my ancestors were born respectful. You know, they didn't have tantrums. They helped out hunting. They picked berries. They did all kinds of things with you know, they had roles. Today they don't have roles. They only go to school and come home, play games, and, you know, violently play games or swear to other kids, and it doesn't need to be stopped. It just, something needs to be added, maybe a Cree game or maybe, you know, some Cree software where people will teach the language, you know, in Cree. When you go into a community, it's like walking into somebody's home. You know, you have to respect their whatever, their property. When you're going into community, you know, you go and say hi to people and smile, and, you know, just, there are people that have bad days everywhere. As long as you show that positive attitude and have that welcoming smile. And right now back home in Norway House, they're building a hospital, and things will change there as soon as that hospital is built. There's going to be so many different people there that everybody will have to have this respect. Everybody will have to relearn the respect, the community respect. It's forgotten back home. I mean, it's there, but it's ignored, I guess. And a lot of other words that good to know is the type of animals, the type of feelings you have. I do flashcards. I make flashcards, and I sell them. And in these flashcards, I have the face on one side with the word, but on the other side is the what it means. When I say a word, you look at those cards. I got 30 of them. You look at those cards, and you look at the word, and you choose that card because you hear it. You choose that card and flip it over, and then you pronounce it. And I have syllabics, and I have English written in English, Roman orthography on the other side. I have a link to the flashcard where you can go onto my group and you can hear this out. So I'm just trying to do for free without any, I use Facebook or whatever. You know, I don't want to get charged for anything else if I were to build my own website or whatever. I'm actually, I do things just to help out. Yeah. I don't ask for much. My Facebook group is called The Forgotten Soldier. It's the name of the novel that I'm working on right now. I have a lot of words on there. I have over 300, or close to 300 people on my group, and anyone can ask questions. I have people that are teaching Cree way up north, or I had people in Japan even learning Cree. So Japanese and Cree are written similarly, and they were very into it. They really asked a lot of questions, but they just disappeared. Before COVID, they just disappeared. So maybe they'll show up one day and come talk Cree to me. But I'm hoping they're still learning, and I'm hoping other people who are wanting to learn will learn. A lot of us that can teach, and a lot of us know a lot of words, I would invite you guys to my group. It's called The Forgotten Soldier. I have it on Facebook. My name is Cam Robertson. It's really good that I've been asked to do these things, and I've been enjoying it. And it's the first time that I've ever done anything like this. I mean, I've done a commercial, but that one, I didn't have to sit in front of cameras. So it was just being recorded on radio. And this one, I don't mind. I love it. And thank you very much. Egusane.
Robert Montweyashing is a Anishinaabe, raised in his people on the Lake Manitoba First Nation, located in the Interlake region of Manitoba. Robert is a pipe carrier, sweat lodge keeper, and attends the annual ceremony of Sundance. Robert has also hosted warrior lodges and eagle dances, to name a few. Over the years, Robert has served his Lake Manitoba First Nation community as both a council member and as a chief. Robert was also a health director in two First Nation communities and the senior health policy analyst for the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs.
Good evening, my relatives. My traditional name is Strong Standing Red Buffalo. I'm of the Bear Clan. My English name is Robert. My family name is Matweyashing. I'm evidence that we as Indigenous people come in all shapes, sizes, and shades these days, okay? What I want to do for you now is I'm going to attempt to share a story, first off in a language, and it's always funnier in a language, and I'm going to do my best attempt of translating it, but more importantly, trying to translate some of the humor in that story into English is where the difficulty comes. Haam kaite me guako a kenzi yuk babau nigiot. Nijin in yuk ki babau nigiok. Agenesh kogion ten yuk minik chigachitin otta mikun gemo. Ojashkun veel ette see puni viis, et ta peaski jääb enu teskate, ka veegi ise kas kipmosse. Aga mingi et skoist nüüd kogu ekaanud. Me ei sõna, et tuute ei kuu võiski niikku, kui sa sakkin on, ja tuppud. Taas on enge kuu viis nii kaiskus see nagu tattuun. Ma võites kagita, aga nüüd teskata iga kasik, et aga noh, ma annan tehtuun, et võiski niikku enge kuu. Aga mis kui ma tõssi jookse, kui ma mõtsoonine, vaikin siia nii väga ka ei jääd. Ka ei ole kogu tõssu oot. Aga mis kui tegu on jääkin siia nii ma tšiigus, kui teen niistsi kekmetsis, et mii ma keni paik nuugu. Siia siit aeg kuiva minu oigi seb, kui kiisik seb mõsse eik seb oota kusnek. Ja kui ma nii mõtsite minu, mii keet mõtsite juk. Sa sõnks see nugima. Aga mii võinsi kiigeta toakkeen siima aga tevendan. Aga mii saate võtse kek. Puu tatavuk, jäga usko nensi kannes. Mii kete see puu tatavuad. Aga mis kiite pekkatsegu. Poe võites ka ka see ketas, obiittuun. Tsegus, ai, tsegus see nüüd, no, obi on tsegus see nüüd aineendab. Aga kõik ma peab tsegus see oot. Aga piin enda maanakene tsegitsine poot. Nga pasi kui nga antaan toon ehkki maa taas on, nga tegei kutsi mihka maan see viitsi on. A mihke ehto pian. A pii nuun toota nuakkin siin, ma teen komin, et see kusta kui niski niikkuen, mei see pasi kuit. Kas kiiti pei kõttas notse kui maa piin, teka nii kui toovada siin ande nekki ees, et mida saan koomis on mihka anna taas on. Oi see maa saan tuutsiini kette maa, mis jääd taas on. Kee kui ma on mikka no piitse maandaan, nootse kui siuppa, siuma kunde. Ei see piin sinne siin, et tema. Nootse kui siuppa kund. Poin jam, nagu ne ega mikka. Poatse kee vinkpa, kui tee see maatse miitset. Neske kui ta nii joon kaan tassa maa, et see kappe tekse vinkpa kutu enenda miisun. Miisun keegi, et nii see maatsa, tema enenda. Ja nii ui jogan on sinne paanud. Jätas ka ka skiite pekkak, on nii maad saa ei saa nii maa. Aga nii sinne maise tagussin, oiski nii kui ka nii paanud, nii sinne maise tagussin. Aga nii kussi tundas siitä, kui nii nii kui on suun otsi, kui tsangit etta on nii ka nii paanud. Mitäs see me en enda minnet, en enda vuotustega on ne, jatteenek, nii ui jogan on mii mee. Ja siis ennen siin, et mii en saam ka ootas kova kuska muunaan. Ainnast nanna nakke jäga isen siin, et oiski niikkui otsiit, otsiitiaan. Voi, ei se pugi tegu oma tiida, kui oiski niikkui. Pfft, notsi kui nii, nii sun. Huhu, kõik ain me võtsi puu tata, pan kangi see test nunnud nan nii sun. Voi, see maa siska muunaat tii sun. En enda minnete maa. Kui joon on tunne chatteenik. Poi pitsine tiine timaisen. Silaren sing me japin in chi set sigo. Wah wah in enda meisen ga mitti gas magi mutian. We wisnin. Me asetta wo chi muchan ta saga man. Chan da we passa ga ga nan da man we silaren saman in chi. Ke manga kenche gas in enda meisen. Meisen geget ne gatsan isaga. Mis on nagu tšiigi ma, mis ei sõni ma vabamust, ehk tšas see nii nii seda on Antoni on. Sigu, kes sai ka niiske ei ma tšiiga, mis mina ei mitsi on, mii ma ei sõn vabamust, ehk tšas see nii Antoni on. Mida sa võiski liikku ei ma piindik ka nii paad, või amata pan tšuvi sõn. Nootsi ka enne kogu ikki nama tšuvsi ei kui neen, ta mineen. Viisin ei siis on siin, et kui siin tiinik ja notsi kui saagu piine. Aga nii nii tekent ka mingi see annu maisin ei näenda, nii miitid ka omisin ei näenda. Vahva, mida sinne paapa ka niski aikid ei näenda, miisin. Mietta kui saanda piinit ei saa, nii ma sai ka niissin iisin ei näenda, mies ei saa ka kein kiimuts. Mida soe, aga jäpidin siit tahtimas siilereensin. Mie see ei So the story I shared is about two trappers that went off into the woods back in the day when our people used to do a lot of trapping and hunting. And they were usually gone till they caught as many furs as they could carry back home. So there was two individuals, and one of them was the older one, and he was kind of the leader of these two individuals. So he decided that they had enough furs. They had all that they'd be able to carry back. Told his younger friend, "We'll pack tonight and we'll leave early in the morning before the sun rises and we'll head home. We've got all the furs that we can handle for now." It's a 2-day journey of walking to get back home from where they came. So they agreed that that's what they would do. They would leave them the very next morning before the sun rose. So the next morning they got ready, they got dressed, and they started on their way. And as they were going on their way, the leader of these two told his younger friend, "We'll take this other trail today. That'll take us to my other friend. He has a cabin about halfway of our journey. Go there, we'll walk up to there. We should get there just as the sun is going down, and he'll put us up for the night. If we get lucky, he might even feed us." It was the plan. So they kept walking and walking. And just as the sun was coming down, they could start to see a little light through the trees. And I guess this was the light of that cabin. So this leader of these two individuals spoke to his younger partner and told him, "Oh, by the way, I've been meaning to tell you, you've embarrassed me quite a bit over the years. And I've always wanted to tell you this, but I think today I need to tell you. You know, oftentimes when we're invited into a home someplace and we're fed a meal, you never know when to quit eating. You're kind of a glutton. And that embarrasses me because a lot of times you end up eating our hosts out of everything they have to offer. I don't want to experience that again when we go and arrive at my friend's place here. If it happens to be that they feed us, what I'm going to do to you is this. I'm going to kick you under the table when I think you've had enough to eat. Do you agree?" So the younger guy, who's the glutton, said, yeah, we can do that. We'll do that." So they agreed. They arrive at the little cabin in the woods, and they knocked at the door. The door opened, and this young woman answered the door. She yells back into the cabin. She says, "Dad, we have company. There's two men here." And then you can hear the old man in the back of the cabin yell back to his daughter, "Tell them to come in, set places at the table, put them at the table, give them something to eat." So now they're eating at the table, and the old man and his daughter sat down and they're having tea while the gentlemen eat. And they had been walking all day, so they're quite famished. And this one that really loves to eat, the glutton, gets a mouthful of whatever they're eating into his mouth. And he's really enjoying this food that he's having. And then he goes for a mouthful, and he's chewing on that. And while he's chewing that, unbeknownst to these two trappers that show up, I guess this young woman had a pet cat in the cabin with them. And I don't know how familiar you are with cats, but they have a tendency many times, and he took it as a sign that his friend is kicking them under the table, that he's got to quit eating, and he's hungry, but he quits eating. So his partner finishes his meal, and so on, and the meal's kind of done, and then the old man tells his daughter, "Well, clean up the table, straighten it up, put the food away, and we'll visit for a bit." because these guys have another day's walk tomorrow, and I'm sure they're going to want to have an early start. But we can visit for a bit. And then he also directs these two men to put their bed cots or rolls right in front of the fireplace, and that's where they could sleep for the night. So they all lay down, and they're all kind of still visiting as they lay down. And then I guess it's getting time that they should get some shut-eye. So the old man tells his daughter, blow out the lantern, and these guys will get some sleep. So she blows out the lantern, and there's still some of the embers of the fireplace going on, so there's a little bit of a light, but not much. It's pretty dark in that cabin. The glutton, he's still very hungry, thinks to himself, well, I think I'll just wait for everybody to fall asleep here, and when I'm sure they're asleep, I seen where she put all the food. I think I'm going to go and dig around, see if I could find something to eat. Kinds of waits, and sure enough, soon he starts to hear some of the snoring to start, so he figures they're in a deep enough sleep. He gets up quietly, and he sneaks over to the counters where he's seen this young woman putting stuff away. And he starts quietly digging around in the counter, but it's pretty dark and it's hard to see. Then he manages to find a sealer, and he kind of smells into the sealer. It smells pretty good, smells kind of sweet. And he dips some fingers in there and he tastes it. It's good, it's homemade jam. Then he figures, my friend would really enjoy some of this jam. So he figures he's gonna go feed his friend some of this jam. In the darkness of the cabin, he somehow gets turned around. So when he thinks he's heading back to where his friend is laying, he's actually going into the direction where this young girl is sleeping. And she's sleeping with her back towards him, and her butt's kind of sticking out a little bit. So he slowly sits down beside where he thinks his friend is, and where his friend, and then he hears all of a sudden, he tells his friend, I got something for you to eat here to try. It's really good. Here, try it. And he starts looking for his friend's head. And then all of a sudden, this woman, I guess in her sleep, lets out a silent fart and kind of goes, pfft. So the guy says, no, you don't need to blow on it. It's not hot. You'll be okay. So he's starting thinking that's her head, right? So he starts feeding what he thinks is his friend's head. Meanwhile, I guess it's where this young woman's butt is hanging out, right? So as he's digging in there and he's feeding his friend, he's feeding himself, he's getting to closer to the bottom of the jar, and his hand gets caught in the jar. Now he can't get it out. And he's thinking, uh-oh, I'm going to get caught stealing here. I got to do something. So he figures he's going to sneak outside and go and see if he can find a big rock someplace along the little creek that's running by the cabin. So he goes outside, there's kind of a moonlit night, and he's searching for this big rock. Meanwhile, back in the cabin, the young woman wakes up. Something doesn't feel right. What happened here? And she starts to feel around her bottom, and she feels something kind of wet and sticky. And she's thinking, oh my God, I pooed in bed. My dad's gonna give me heck. I gotta go outside and clean myself off before anybody finds out. So she too sneaks outside. And now she's kind of bent over by the little stream there, washing herself in her undies. Meanwhile, this guy's still roaming around the creek side looking for this rock. And the area that he just came from, he turns around, all of a sudden there's a rock that wasn't there earlier. And he figures maybe the clouds were covering the moonlight or something. Why, he didn't notice it. So he goes running up to this rock, and as hard as he can, he smashes that sealer on the rock to break it off his hand, which is this young woman's butt up in the air, right? And he scares the hell out of this young woman to the point where she yells out, I'm sorry, Dad, I'm sorry, I'll never poop in bed again. That's the end of the story. And the term that I use, it's a term we use to describe somebody going head over heels. But in the instance of storytelling, the term is used, like I just took a bow. Miigwech.
Michael Kazuha grew up in Repulse Bay, Northwest Territories, now Nunavut. During his childhood, his family traveled by dog sled, living a traditional Inuit lifestyle. He's the author of 12 children's books, including The Littlest Sled Dog, The Curse of the Shaman, T is for Territories, Northern Lights, The Soccer Trails, winner of the Ruth Schwartz Award, Hide and Seek, My Arctic 1-2-3, and Baseball Bats for Christmas. He was also a co-writer of A Promise is a Promise with Robert Munch. Michael lives in Manitoba and spends most summers in Rankin Inlet, Nunavut.
I am Michael Kazuha. And at home up north, people call me Alvarluk. I travel around, I tell stories in schools, libraries, bookstores. I have something like 16 or 17 books that have been published. Ever since I started writing for children, writing for everybody actually, 33 years ago, I had a book published, A Promise, A Promise. I started thinking about who are we? Who are the Inuit? Where did we come from? How did we get here? Why did we settle in one of the coldest places in the world and stay there? And I was thinking, I have read so much stuff about us Inuit, written by scholars, written by archaeologists, anthropologists, talking about where Inuit came from and how we got here into North America. And one of the theories that I read a long time ago is that we've been around here for 4,000 years. That was the first thing I read. And then the next thing I read, we have been here for 6,000 years. I read that Inuit came across the Bering Strait and ended up in North America, in Alaska. And we came from Siberia across the Bering Strait and into North America, but we didn't cross the Bering Strait by water, that we trekked across there. And we did that, according to what I read, during the last ice age, because for some strange reason, there was no water on the Bering Strait. It was all dry land on Bering Strait during the last ice age. I don't know how that happened, but apparently that's what archaeologists and historians think. So we ended up here, and I figured if we came here during the last ice age, then we must have been here at least 10,500 years ago, because that last ice age went away 10,500 years ago, and there was water back on, you know, Bering Strait. But the Bering Strait is only 52 miles wide, and there's an island in the middle. For a long time, we Inuit have been traveling around in these things we call kayaks. We invented them, and we covered them with sealskin. We've had these things for a long, long time, and I don't think there was ever any problem of going across the Bering Strait, because it's only 52 miles wide, and there's an island in the middle. That was not the only vessel that we invented. We also invented something called an umiak. And an umiak is a huge open boat that is as long as 30 feet long. And we used to paddle it and sail it. I figure, you know, the Bering Strait was no problem at all. And we ended up here. So when we ended up in North America, we settled all across the north, all the way from Alaska to Baffin Island. We continued on up to Greenland, and because there are Inuit spread out all across there. When we first came, you know, we might not have had very much knowledge about living here. If we were the very first people, 10,500 years farther, longer than 10,500 years ago, then there couldn't have been anybody that we could ask, you know, how do you live here? What do you eat? How do you dress? What do you live in? How do you travel? How do you hunt? all those questions. We had all those questions and nobody to ask all those questions. So we had to figure it out from scratch. That means along the way, we invented so many things. The kayak, we invented the igloo, we invented these boots. These are made of sealskins and they are the boots. They're the work boots that we wear. And I used to wear these every day when I was a kid. What's wonderful about them is, you know, they're completely made of sealskins and these things are light, warm, and they are waterproof. So somewhere along the way, we invented waterproof boots. We invented also something we call kudlik. And this kudlik is really small, just a small model that we bought from up north somewhere. But the real ones that we used were really big, because they're made of soapstone. And you put seal oil in here in the depression and the wick all along the front, and you light it. And when you burn this, it looks like it's got little candles all along the front. And that is what heated our igloos. And that is what we cooked with since we moved across, probably even before we moved from Siberia or wherever. We went so far as to invent toys. And this is a toy. It's made out of seal bone. It comes from a great big seal, what we call Ugyuk. And in English, they're called a bearded seal because, of course, they have a beard. This has a little hole right there, and that's where the tendons used to go through. And what you have to do is you have to flip the bone up in the air and catch it in the little hole with the stick. So we play it like this. We had igloos. We have the warmest clothing in the world. We had lots of food because there are lots of seals, there are lots of caribou, there are lots of fish, and so we had lots to eat, and we had warm clothing, we had waterproof boots, we had kayaks and all kinds of things, and even toys. So after a while, we were very comfortable. And what happens when you're comfortable is that your people begin to multiply. So there got to be more and more and more Inuit. And today, Inuit are spread out all across the north. There are Inuit in Siberia, there are Inuit in Alaska, there are Inuit all across northern Canada, including northern Quebec and Labrador, and there are Inuit in Greenland. And we all speak the same language, and it has many different dialects, our language, Inuktitut. We eat the same basic foods, we dress basically the same way, and our language has many different dialects. I have a hard time translating back and forth from one language to another. Kayongnak. You would say that if you were standing inside and you look outside and it looks really, really cold. You say, Kayongnak, can't bear to go out there because it looks so cold. Like, it's something that, you know, that is very hard to translate word for word in English. And we have lots of those kinds of things that are really hard to translate. You know, what you eat, how you feel, how you dress, what you call things like pilok is caribou fur, like one little piece of fur, caribou fur, and kisik is seal skin. There are all kinds of different ways of saying things. We skin a seal, right? We skin a seal. We skin all kinds of animals. We skin birds. And when we talk about skinning animals, we have two different words, depending on whether they are sea mammals or land mammals. So for sea mammals, we use pilak, which means to cut. So when we skin a seal, we pilak it. When we skin a caribou, we aktok it. When we skin Arctic hare, we aktok it, just like we skin caribou. But polar bears are sea mammals. They're not land mammals in our culture. So we pilak a polar bear like we pilak seals. So there are those different differences in the way we look at as we classify things. After a while, you know, we were comfortable. And when you have a lot of people in one area, one thing you need are rules. Rules about how to get along with each other, how to take care of the young people so we can raise them to be respectable adults. We need rules about how to take care of the old people. And they have all this knowledge that you have to borrow before they pass away. You need rules about how to take care of the land because the land sustains all the animals that clothe you, that feed you. And so we need all these rules. And a long, long time ago, somebody created those rules. And then they had to figure out a way to pass them on to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation and the next generations for 10,000, 20,000 years. And how did they do that? They did it through the stories. And these stories are really, really, really old. They're hundreds, maybe thousands of years old. The most famous person in our stories is a man called Kiviok. My grandmother said Kiviok was born a long, 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 long time ago, so long ago that he was the very first person on Earth. And I used to have this little joke with my grandmother. I would say, "Grandmother, if Kiviok was the first person, how come he had a mother?" And my grandmother would say, "Don't argue with old people." But my grandmother was very kind and gentle, and I wasn't very scared of her, so I would tease her, "Grandmother, you know, he had a mother. How could he be the first person?" Old Inuit say Kiviok is still alive today, but he is so old, his body is turning to stone. And they say someday, when his heart turns completely to stone and stops, that will be the end of the universe. And there are many, many, many stories about this man. In the very first story about Kiviok, there was a little boy. And this little boy loved to go out to play, but there were mean boys who lived in his camp. They would run after him, they would fight him, they would make him cry. They would rip up all his clothes, and the poor boy would go home to his grandmother because he was an orphan. He had no mother and no father, so he lived with his grandmother. Poor old grandmother would take her needle and thread, and she would sew his clothes all back together again. And the little boy would put on his clothes. He would go off to play. The mean boys would run after him. They would fight him. They would make him cry. They would rip up all his clothes. And his poor old grandmother had to sew them all back together again. One day, when the little boy came home, there was a little seal that somebody had caught for them, and it was lying on the floor. His grandmother said, "I would like you to skin that seal." So the little boy took a knife. He started to skin the seal, and his grandmother said, "Be careful, be careful. Don't put any holes in the skin." So very, very carefully, the little boy skinned the seal. And when he was all finished, his grandmother said, "I would like you to take the seal skin and pull it over your head, and I would like you to put your head in that pail of water." So the little boy took the seal skin, he pulled it over his head so that it fit nicely, and then he took a deep breath, and he stuck his head into this pail of water. He kept his head underwater as long as he could in one of his long shirt. He lifted his head and he went, and his grandmother said, "Do it again." So he took another deep breath and he stuck his head back into this pail of water. And he kept putting his head back in the water. And an old man way up in a place called Kugarduk told me he would keep his head underwater so long he would move the sun. Have you ever tried to hold your breath until the sun moves? It takes a long time. And finally, his grandmother was satisfied that he could keep his head underwater long enough. And she said, "I would like you to go down to the beach. And when you're walking to the beach, make sure nobody sees you. And when you get to the water's edge, I would like you to take the seal skin and pull it over your head and jump into the water and go for a swim and come up right in front of all your mean friends who are playing on the beach." And sure enough, all the mean boys were playing on the beach. The little boy took the seal skin. He walked down to the beach. He made sure nobody saw him. And when he got to the water's edge, he took the sealskin, he pulled it over his head so that it fit nicely, and then he took a deep breath, and he jumped into the water. He went for a swim underwater, and he came up right in front of all the mean boys who were playing on the beach. And they looked at him, and they said, "Hey, there's the little seal. They thought he was the little seal, and they all ran up. They grabbed their kayaks, they put their kayaks in the water, they hopped in. They took their long paddles, and they started to paddle following the little seal. And the little seal would go down underwater, and he would swim a little bit farther out, and then he would come up again. And the mean boys who fought him and made him cry and ripped all his clothes, they paddled their kayaks following along behind him. And it was a beautiful, beautiful day. And after a while, they were way out at sea. And when they were way out at sea, when the little seal came up, he would lift up his arm and his leg, and he would sing, Anorigana'uk, Anorigakaili, Unga, Unga. And then he'd go down again. And he would swim a little bit farther out, and when he came up, he would lift up his arm and his leg, and he would sing, Where is my wind? I want my wind. And he would make a crying sound like a little baby. Wah, wah. People say the weather that was on the day you were born is your very own weather. And that is why if you were born on a sunny day, usually the sun shines on your birthday. If you were born on a rainy day, usually it rains on your birthday. And this little boy was born on a very, very windy day. And he was calling the weather that was on the day he was born. The wind heard him and it started to come. It got windier and windier and windier. And before long, there were huge waves in the water. And every once in a while, a giant wave would come and it would flip the kayaks over. And before long, there was only one person left. That person was Kivio. Now, Kivio ended up way over on the other side of the ocean in this strange place. And when he got there, he got homesick. So he started traveling, trying to find his way home. And while Kivio was trying to find his way home, he traveled through every part of the north. So there are stories about him everywhere. If you go to Siberia, you can hear stories about Kivio. If you go to Alaska, you can hear stories about Kivio. We have Kivio stories all across northern Canada, and there are Kivio stories in Greenland too. And those are the stories that I heard when I was a little boy.
Stay tuned for the next episodes of the Indigenous Languages series. The project is funded by the Government of Canada. If you want to find out more about the Indigenous Languages series, head to u-channel.ca, where there are 19 episodes featuring Cree, Ojibwe, and Inuktitut, and it is an awesome time. Tune in to 101.5 FM every Tuesday at 1 p.m. to hear more stories, experiences, and cultures from fantastic people that call Canada home. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.